Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Voicewood Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Blackhead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Night here. They've been predicting rain here in Florida for the last, two or three days. They've been saying it's going to rain this evening or this afternoon, and it's supposed to be really nasty and all that good stuff, and it's not. I don't know what happened, which I'm not complaining because we've had so much rain over the last month or so. So a little bit of no rain that they predicted is always, always a good thing. Welcome to the show. It is Thursday evening, September the 24th, 2015, or however you want to say it. This is live right now. If you're listening to this right now, you can call in and talk. Call in and join us on the program. Our number here, like we said on the earlier one, is 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235. Call in if you want to talk about wine. And I'll be happy to talk to you a little bit before then and then bring you on the air and we can talk about wine. Or if you're listening to this on archives, if you're not listening to this on September 24th at 7 o'clock in the evening Eastern time, then don't call because I won't answer. We got some more miscellaneous for you tonight. October is going to be our haunted month, like always. I'm going to get a hold of Joy of Joy's Joy of Wine. And she's going to join us again, and we're going to be talking about. We got five Thursdays in October. We got quite a few of them there to talk about. So we will start getting haunted wineries lined up and different things going on in September or in October, so we can do our standard haunted or ghost or spirited or whatever winery month. And talk about stuff like that. Joy is always a pleasure to have on the show. She's always fun and informative. Mike's going to be back in next month, too, in October. He's got a schedule change, and He's going to be off on Thursday evening, so he'll be joining us back again in October. So it's shaping up to be a good month in October. And also, yesterday, it was the first day of autumn. I'm sure you all know that already. We all dug out our sweaters and long pants and everything, getting ready for the autumn. And we're looking to see the leaves change and all that here in Florida. But much to all of our dismay, it was back up to 90 degrees today here. And no change. Same old from summer to autumn. But we're looking forward to winter now, and hopefully we'll drop down a few degrees then. I was thinking the other day, I always tell you holidays coming up, and I always mention that on there, and you say, what does that have to do with wine? Actually, that has a lot to do with wine. I remind you of the holidays, and that way you can get out a bottle of wine and say, oh, it's Yom Kippur. It's time to have a glass of wine. Oh, it's the first day of autumn. It's time to have a glass of wine. Oh, it's Patriots Day. It's time to have a glass of wine. Labor Day, Rosh Hashanah, Grandparents Day, POWMI Day, MIA Day. I mean, as if we do need excuses to have a glass of wine, but those are great possibilities and great ways to do it. So that's why I keep telling you about the holidays coming up and all that. It's not that I'm just trying to talk just for the sake of talking. I'm trying to give you a good reason to open up a bottle of wine. Speaking of opening up a bottle of wine, tonight I have a 2013 Conquista. Conquista. This is an Argentinian wine. The wines of Mendoza. It's a Malbec. I enjoy a good Argentinian Malbec. I really do. They make an excellent Malbec. Most of Argentina wineries do. It says Conquista Oak Cask, and that's the name of it. Conquista Oak Cask Malbec, Argentina. Conquista Oak Cask Malbec has been made to enhance the best expression from each area. The cooler regions offer plum and dark cherry fruit characters. The warmer regions offer depth of color and richness. The regions will, with stony soils, add complexity, and when carefully blended and left to rest for 6 months in oak cask, the wine finishes with great finesse, adding layers of smoke, cocoa, and silky tannins. In Argentina, we pair this with hearty grilled meats, rich cheeses, or enjoy simply on its own, which I am doing tonight, along with my engineer. She has her glass over there and is enjoying it on her own, too. So I guess we aren't on our own. We're both together, but without accompaniment of food or anything. Nice wine. It really is. It's just, I tell people in the class, I teach class. In fact, I have a class coming up Sunday, by the way. I tell people in the class, don't buy a wine based on the label. You can go wax poetic about anything on the label, which means nothing about the wine. So don't buy it based on the label. If you have recommendations or something, really best, but stay away from the label. Just as a basis for buying your wine. Cut some miscellaneous for us tonight. A variety of different things that I want to pass on to you and get you caught up on. Start out with the El Nino threat in the West. Now, we've talked about the El Nino and how it's going to, hopefully, it's going to stop the problems with the droughts in California. It's supposed to be a big one. In fact, they're saying it's building up tremendously right now. It's got some people concerned in about how big it could turn out to be. But they're saying that as El Nino is getting bigger and bigger, it is becoming an issue of what is going to happen. 4 years of drought and, that's 15 pictures on that. I didn't think that was one. No, it's not. It is a big one. They're saying it's going to be quite a large El Nino coming through, and it's going to affect a lot of areas. Now, you have to consider, when this thing comes through, it's building up right now, and they're saying it's, well, 4 years of drought, and the creeks and rivers flowing in the Bay Area, and we're talking about San Francisco Bay Area now, because it's just south of Napa. The weather scientists are recording water temperatures in the Pacific nearing the highest they've ever seen. Well, suggesting the El Nino will open an atmospheric fire hose is what they're going to, what they're calling it, when the jet stream brings it in, which rising tide of anxiety among Californians. Across the San Francisco Bay Area, roofers and tree trimmers and all that are so busy, they are not accepting any new jobs because people are starting to get concerned. The one area in south of San Francisco, the Palo Alto area and Alamo and Morgan Hill and all that area around there, that's all south San Francisco, south of San Jose, are really getting concerned. There's a creek, and that's just, you know, basically what it is. There's a creek. It's called the San Francisquito Creek. San Francisquito Creek. It's in Palo Alto, and it is small, and it floods. And it floods seriously, and it floods a lot of areas and a lot of places around there. And they're concerned that this El Nino is going to cause major flooding in that areas in the creeks, not only in those areas, but also on up into the hills. Now, these fires have been devastating. We know that. We've all heard about the fires and everything. But then you put on top of that torrential rain, and there's nothing to hold the soil. It's going to cause major mudslides and landslides in a lot of the areas. And because of the major mudslides and landslides, it may create more of a problem than what this is going to cure with it. The Pacific Gas and Electric Company has crews out working all over the place. The drought stricken trees are dying. They said that they've got something like 5,000 major trees that are dead in the San Francisco area and South San Francisco area because of the drought. And all this is going to create problems when the rains come in and El Nino rains. In 1998, there was a flood from the El Nino in the San Francisquito Creek area. They expect it to be just as bad as that. Actually, the San Francisquito Creek drains over 40 square miles from Santa Cruz Mountain, so it brings down a lot of runoff, which also is going to affect a lot of the areas around there and all that. And that is right in, well, right over the hill from Livermore Valley. And Livermore Valley is a big, big grape growing region. And so that's something that they're taking caution on right now. If it hits in the winter and if it goes in the winter, you may get flooding of the grapevines, but they should survive. There should not be an issue as long as it doesn't cause any mudslides. And further south in the Paso Robles area, there is possibilities of mudslides and stuff destroying vineyards there, because there's a lot of hills and a lot of hilly area there that has vineyards in it. They're saying sandbags, no high-tech solution for it. The best way of actually getting everything stopped and to fight the flooding is just the old low-tech burlap sandbags, and that's what they're looking at to be able to control it and take care of it in a lot of areas. So it is, they're already looking at a problem. There was 97-98 El Nino caused 33 landslides, and it's an issue. It's an issue that they're concerned about. It's an issue that they're looking at trying to take care of as much as they can before, but they don't know. It's something they're all worried about, and especially with the drought, it's the El Nino might not be the lifesaver. It might just be another great curse on our wonderful state of California out there. So we'll see. We'll keep you informed. We'll keep you posted on that as stuff happens and as things progress through that. Oh, let's see. Here we go. This is, we've talked about smoke taint, because of all the fires that have been happening. And let's I'll tell you some, actually go into a little bit of detail here on smoke taint. You can have it. Engineer just came and picked up the bottle of wine, I was saying. The fires here that we've been having out in California and in Oregon and Washington and, well, other places in the country, too. We're hearing about those. But this is the most of them out in the western United States because of the drought. But what is smoke taint? Let me read this little bit here. And this is, you know, talking about some technical aspects of it, but it's a good summary. Smoke taint is made up of numerous compounds present in smoke that, in simplistic terms, enters the fruit via the skin. The markers for smoke taint are generally guaiacol, G-U-A-I-A-C-O-L, guaiacol, and 4-methylguaiacol. So, you know, again, and these can be measured in the juice prior to fermentation. It must be noted that these markers do not necessarily indicate the extent of the problem, but are used to identify a problem that could be a potential problem in the fruit. So there you go. Smoke taint can be identified that it's there, but not if it's really going to be passed on. Often smoke taint is not detectable based on a sensory evaluation of squished grapes. So if you take yourself a bunch of grapes, you squeeze them, you smell them, and you can't really tell if it's got smoke taint or not. It's as simple as that. Smoke taint compounds are bound to the glycosides within the grape via a glycosidic bond. During fermentation, these bonds break as the glycosides are converted to their fermented byproducts, hence ethanol, CO2, acetic acid, etc. During this bond breakage, the smoke compounds are released into the wine, resulting in an increase in smoke taint-related volatiles, which are then easily identifiable via a sensory evaluation of the wine. And once it starts fermenting, it breaks it apart, and then you can smell it. Interestingly enough, it is one. If one was to take a measurement of the glycol concentration before, during, and after fermentation, one would see a steady rise in these levels. This was evident in 2009 when they had smoke taint in wines. The levels of taint are typically much higher in red wines than in white wines. Well, of course, you're having more of the skin in contact with it, and it's absorbing through the skin, so I'm sure it's getting a lot of it into the skin. The evidence points to a concentration of the smoke compounds within the skin of the fruit, and since red, again, requires an extended time with the skin, that is the reason. All right, so that is actually what smoke taint is. Now, the treatments. Okay, it's been shown that membrane treatments in combination with absorption is effective means of dealing with smoke taint. They've done different testing and stuff like that. At one facility where over 500,000 gallons were treated in multiple lots of wine, approximately half of the wine was treated. The wine that was treated showed no sign of smoke taint within 1 year of processing. So it can be treated. The other half showed smoke taint at levels that were a lot lower than the original levels. So it's, you know, it can be treated if, and I'm sure it is a, it doesn't say well, let's see, it does amelioration of smoke taint in wine by reverse osmosis and solid phase absorption is recommended. So, and it can take it out. There are other methods, including additives or fining agents, but they have not been found to be as effective. So if a wine does get smoke taint in it, it can be treated by reverse osmosis or solid phase absorption. It states, if you want to barrel age it, use natural oak barrels for aging purposes. Toasted oak barrels add a smoky component to the wine, which causes the smoke taint to be stronger. And they're saying, let's see what it says. For those of you with no alternative but to get the wine to bottle and on the shelf, treatment will be necessary early in the wine's life. So the treatment process should be done as soon as possible. And here we go. Treatment process, the most effective treatment process for treating smoke-tainted wine involves the use of nanofiltration membrane elements in combination with absorption resin. Wow. Typically, the wine needs to be passed through this process at least 2 to 4 times, depending on the severity of the problem. In 2009, wine required an average of 3 passes through the system, although some wines took 6 or 7 passes to reach undetectable levels. So there you go, smoke taint. We have talked about that in the past. We've talked about what smoke taint is and what it does and all that. And so it can be treated if you get it so far as being in your bottle of wine. You shouldn't. I mean, really, they should be treating it, and they should be aware of it, and should be doing it long before that. So, I don't know. The wine in cans. We've been talking about wine in cans off and on and all that. But is it going to catch on? Is it going to happen? Or is it just a thing that they're trying to say, here, we got wine in cans, now you need to start doing it? Or is it something that we can expect to see more and more? Well, it looks like we might see more and more. The unmistakable pop of a beer can opening, only it's wine and not beer. That's, something that it's hard to imagine. Although it shouldn't pop. And when I first read this, I thought, it shouldn't pop. Beer is bubbly, but I don't know. Maybe it will. I don't know. I haven't had a wine in a can, so I don't know. Australia's Baroque's Wines were the first to try the idea of wine in a can back in 1996, and it's just now catching on here in the United States. Let's see, for the record, that's just a note. It's an idea of wine in a can. Who is this? Well, I don't know. Helen's Wines at John and Vinny's Blend created Find Some Sense of Humor. Well, that's it does indeed strike as a practical idea, especially for folks who go into a certain situation where they can't take a bottle, which is true, trips and all that. Oh, speaking of wine and places you can't take it, I have been looking on the internet trying to find a list. I'm finding a lot of stuff, food and beverages and stuff at baseball stadiums and all that, and I just haven't run across a list or anything of saying what wineries ballparks, Major League ballparks serve wine. And so I'm still searching. Hopefully I'll have some information for you soon, but it's more difficult than I thought just to find a simple thing like that. Nobody's going to be putting expensive stuff in a can. Cans aren't a novelty anymore, though. You walk into wine stores and you're going to see cans of Fiction Pinot Gris or Underwood Pinot Noir mixed in with the summer wines in the bottles. And some restaurants, they're serving Fiction White and Red in brown paper bags, but they're stamped with the logo, so the bags tell you what's inside there. There's Fiction is respected wine made by Andrew Jones of Field Recordings in Paso Robles. He treats the grapes the same whether the wine is to be bottled or canned, and he picks his grapes and says that the acidity really comes out in the can, which I can imagine. Just for some reason, it seemed like it would. The canning line is running a lot more. He said last year they put 25% of their harvesting cans. This year, it's 50%. He introduced another line, this from All Writers, called Alloy Wine Works. And there's others that you're going to find in the can, include Flip Flop Wines and Francis Ford Coppola, with California sparkling wine called Sophia. The Underwood label, Oregon Union Wine Company, makes a Pinot Noir, a Pinot Gris, and a Rosé. And the hashtag on the can is hashtag Pinkies Down. Union Wine founder says that he is thrilled with the packaging. As he wrestled with the idea for a short time, but came up with it, and he is happy with the results so far, starting to catch on. They've done test runs with the Underwood wine in Oregon in the summer of 2013, and it generated enough interest that he launched it nationally in 2014. 95% of the sales are still in bottles, but cans are growing at a faster rate. Ben Parsons, founder of the Infinite Monkey Theorem, an urban winery in Denver, feels the same way. Our brands are all about making wine fun and accessible and cutting through the pretension. And putting wines in the can is about the best way, the least pretentious thing you can do, which is probably very true. It's well suited for outdoor. In 2011, no one understood it, but 3 years later, national grocery chains are now putting wine in the can out. Frontier Airlines serves it on board. And Parsons from Monkey Theorem is going to ramp up his production to probably 20,000 cases this year, or 480,000 cans. That's up from 5,000 cases last year. So, you know, I mean, that's a substantial difference there, four times the amount. He's got another a brand that he's putting in, Flip Flop. He's putting in cans also. I hear thunder in the distance. Maybe we aren't going to get our rain that we predicted today, only much, much later. Stay in there, bus people. You're going to be all right. Cans are 375 milliliters. They're not the regular big ones. It could be even 187 milliliter, which is what Francis Ford Coppola uses for its sparkling Sophia wine. So 375 milliliters, half. A 12-ounce can runs about 355 milliliters. So, you know, 375 is a little over the 12-ounce standard can. Andrew Jones from Field Recordings is putting out a Tallboy 500 milliliter can, and it's about 3.5 glasses if you actually do it the proper way with 5 ounce pours. But it fits into your backpack, and it's a good way to take around to different places and all that. So wine in a can. It's there. It's here to stay. You know, if you like it, then that's great. And if you don't like it, then get used to it, because it's not going to go away. Some wine in a can that is available. And And, you know, if you can't find them in your local store, then hang in there. If your wine shop, hang in there, because they are going to be coming. You're going to get wine in the can that's going to be in all the stores. It's something that's happening. But let me give you right now, we have the 2013 Field Recordings Fiction Red, which comes in a 500 ml can, and it's about $10. It's a Zinfandel-based blend that also includes a Grenache, Syrah, Malverde, Tempranillo, and Torrego Nacional. He describes it as dark berries, smoke, and forest. The 2014 Field Recordings Fiction Pinot Gris, again, a 500 ml can, about $8. It's mostly Pinot Gris with a small amount of Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, and Malvasia Bianca. The 2014 Field Recordings Fiction Rosé, 500 ml can, about $8. It's one fruity taste of raspberry, strawberries, and rose petals. It's made with about 70% Grenache and 20% Cinsault and 10% Black Muscat. 2014 Alloy Wine Works Central Coast Grenache Rosé. 500 milliliter can, $7.50. A lively rosé with strawberry and cherry flavors. 2014 Underwood. Now, Underwood is the one that we've talked about. UNDERWOOD on the can. It's broken down three lines, three letters each line. Underwood. Pinot Noir. 375 milliliter, about $6. Light, pleasant Oregon Pinot Noir, tasting of raspberries and cherries and soft tannins. 2014 Underwood Pinot Gris from the Willamette Valley, 375 ml can, about $6. Basic white with notes of citrus and pear. 2014 Underwood Rosé Wine, 375 ml can, about $6 also. A dry Oregon Rosé to take on the go anywhere, the beach, a hike, or the deck. And in a non-vintage, Francis Ford Coppola, Sophia Blanc de Blanc, Blanc de Blanc, 187 milliliter can, $4, or you can get a 4-pack for $12. A California sparkling wine made from a blend of 70% Pinot Blanc, 20% Sauvignon Blanc, and 10% Muscat. Packaged in girly pink in diminutive cans. Each can comes with a straw. I like that. Did you hear that, engineer? that's fun. That's fun. Now, that's what they're supposed to be, though. That's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be fun. Take him or places. So, there you go. If you see him, try him. You have nothing to lose. And, you may find yourself something interesting there. And if nothing else, it gives you something to talk about to people or to whip it out when you're out somewhere or something like that. So, it's fun. Four Under the Radar Wine Regions. This is a quick, interesting article I wanted to tell you about. We've all heard of Napa, Sonoma, all the ones in California, Finger Lakes, Willamette Valleys, and different things like that. But this little article here by Jody Homer listed four regions that really need to be visited. She's saying these are great regions with all sorts of cool stuff around it. First one lists the Grand Valley in Colorado, set in the backdrop of the Books Cliffs Mountain Range in Grand Mesa. The wineries are the highest in North America with an average altitude of 4,700 feet. So it produces sunny, warm days and very cool nights, so microclimate works well. The Grand Valley extends from Fruta to Palisade, a small town just a few miles east of Grand Junction. And Grand Junction is where two-thirds of Colorado's vineyards are. So that is in an area there that you can see it. What is unique about this area is it's well mapped out. The Palisade Fruit and Wine Byway is a trail with routes ranging from 5 to 25 miles that you do on your bike. It's not something that you drive. It's not something you walk. But you jump on your bicycle and you take it around to 5 to 25 mile winery visits and stuff like that. So my engineer just came in. I got to tell you, did you hear me? The Francis Ford Coppola Sophia Champagne comes in a 187 millimeter can with a straw. I love that. Yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, not pretentious at all. So, but this, here we go back to Colorado. The Colorado Mountain Wine Fest is in September. I think it's just over. It just happened, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But there's all sorts of stuff going on out there in that area. But I think the coolest thing about that is you can jump on your bicycle. You can pass by as many as 20 wineries, as well as there's distilleries out there, meaderies, all sorts of things. So put that on your to-do list. Newport County, Rhode Island. It's known as the City by the Sea, but it's also a big wine region there. The growing season is long and cool because of being so far north. Sometimes it extends for another month or so here, about into November. The vineyards all within a 45-minute drive from historic Newport, and it includes a lot of different wineries. Just a big variety. Newport Vineyards is right close there, where they have Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and a lot of other varietals on a 60-acre vineyard. There is tours, there's tastings, picnic. You can a lot of the areas there next to the Saconic River and National Register of Historic Places. And it's also right now, in fact, we might be at the end of it, right now starting to change the leaves. So Newport County, Rhode Island, wineries and leaf changings and all sorts of fun things up there and historic homes. There's also Newport Mansions Food and Wine Festival in September, although we are getting toward the end of September, all these. I should have found this earlier. Third one, Verde Valley, Arizona. Verde Valley, Arizona. Northern Arizona, Sedona, Clarkdale, Cottonwood. In the Verde Valley, the harsh desert climate makes for tough growing conditions, but the grapevines survive. The fruit is a little less abundant when they grow up, but it produces a very intense fruit. Southwest grapes that they grow down there, the Viognier, Malverde, Merlot, and Chenin Blanc. The Verde Valley Wine Trail runs through the desert and has Red Rock Canyons and different five wineries on there. They have painted barrels along the wine trail that invites people to check them out. 40 wine barrels are displayed on the route. All sorts of different stuff in that area. That is northern. We've talked to wineries. I've been to the southern Arizona wine trail and wine country, which is really pretty cool. But this is in the northern area. Again, in late September, Sedona Wine Fest. It's going on, I think, this weekend. So if you're in Arizona, the Sedona Wine Fest this weekend. And the last one here, Yadkin Valley in North Carolina, cut out the tobacco plants, planted vineyards, grapevines. It's located in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. The southern growing region produces muscadine and scuppernong grapes. Well, you know, sweet, but they also produce the European vinifera varieties, Merlot, Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Chardonnay. More than 1.4 million acres of the valley in northwest North Carolina. And its first wine region in the state is up there, as well as others. 36 wineries now cover that area. There's a 35-acre vineyard that was the first USDA-certified organic winery and winery in North Carolina, the Raffadelli Vineyards and Winery, which has 6,000 square feet. The 35-acre USDA certified Carolina Heritage Vineyard and Winery. Carolina Heritage Vineyard and Winery. The Raffaldini Vineyards and Winery is a 6,000 square foot Italian villa style tasting room and 36-acre vineyard. So they also are certified as a wildlife sanctuary by the National Wildlife Federation. So a lot of stuff to check out there. October in the Yadkin Valley, it brings in the Yadkin Valley Grape Festival with more than 20 local wineries in one spot, food vendors, artisans, and so another great place to check out right now. So there you go. I saw that, and I was excited about that. There were some great places there, great wineries there and great areas and some great things to do. Something that old people like myself may be interested in, which where is it here? There it is. Red wine. And we all keep hearing about the benefits of red wine and all the good stuff of red wine and how great it is and how wonderful it is and all that. But the newest study that has been done by a team of researchers at Georgetown University Medical Center has linked the consumption of... come on. I hate it when pop-ups block what you're trying to see and trying to do, and then they can't get to it. No, I don't want to join now. I want that to get out of there. And I don't want that on there either. And why don't we just click out of that completely too and start back at the beginning here. Pop-ups are the bane of anybody trying to do anything on a computer. There we go. Now, if the pop-up comes up, we will try to block it as fast as it comes up. A team of researchers in Georgetown University Medical Center has linked the consumption of pure form of resveratrol to the decline in the speed in which dementia and Alzheimer's progresses. Pure form is... what is that? That I don't want to hear talking on this. Why do I have talking? Mute. All right, there we go. Some advertisement on this. A team of researchers, pure form of resveratrol. Resveratrol is a chemical compound present in dark chocolate, red wine, red grapes, and raspberries. I didn't know it was in raspberries. That's something new to me. When exposed to high doses of pure resveratrol, the researchers found that the biomarker that declines with the progression of Alzheimer's becomes stabilized in people with mild to moderate form of the disease. But, and there's always a but on these things, the dosage was so high that a person would have to rely on the amount of resveratrol contained in 1,000 bottles of red wine per day to slow down the underlying progress of the disease. Well, you know, and if you're drinking 1,000 bottles of red wine a day, you know, that leaves up all sorts of possibilities. Researchers observed that people treated with high doses of resveratrol showed no change in the levels of the chemicals in their blood that causes the decline in Alzheimer's. So, they're looking at it to see if there's any other ways, but it is progress. It is something that is good, actually. But if you want to try to drink 1,000 bottles of red wine a day to get the health benefits, I'm sure that they might be able to find some place for you in the study. The Valley fire in California. It actually has been rated as one of the top five fires that has ever went through California. It really is a devastating fire. But the Valley Fire did incinerate Shed Horn Cellars. Reached 61,000 acres in Napa and Lake counties, in northern Napa and southern counties. And it destroyed Shed Horn Cellars, a winery that is in Middleton, or Middletown, in southern Lake County. It didn't hurt anyone, but it burned the winery to the ground. It said they make wine under the Langtree and Juanac labels. Lost one of the buildings on the property, though other buildings, including the historic Lily Langtree House, were spared. All the employees were safe. Ventures must also assess whether smoke is likely to cause taint in the grapes, like it happened in 2008. They're usually thankful for an early harvest, but this is causing problems. American Red Cross has stepped in and providing shelters for those in the Valley of Fire. If you want to donate, get a hold of the Red Cross. I'm sure they will be more than happy to take any donations. You can earmark it for those people there at the Valley of Fire, those who've lost their houses and stuff. It's devastating, and any little bit will help and can help. So, yeah, if you want to donate. But it did, Shed Horn Cellars did burn to the ground from that fire. Wait a minute, there's something I wanted to share with you, and I need to find it here quickly. Let me see. Nope, it's not there. And is it here? Yes, it is. One the person that I work with, a state representative for TTB, has moved on. She decided that she would leave her job and move on to other stuff. But she sent me an interesting link here. It is wine maps. And this is really interesting. Site, if you will. Every Vine, it's what it's called. Go to www.everyvine.com. EveryVine. Everyvine.com. Great little site. And thank you, Kelly, for sending this to me. And you sent it to me a while back, and I've been playing with it, looking at it, and I just remembered to tell people about it tonight. But it is, it lists vineyards. There's a list of vineyards. There's also a list of wineries, wine regions, maps, and you can buy maps. There's a blog that's on it and all that. But it's really interesting because they break a lot of stuff down. They have 221,917 acres that have joined the Every Wine, or Every Vine site. The vineyards, the latest one is to be added. They got a list there, the 10 that the latest one is to be added. A lot of California, but there's some in other areas. That's the vineyards and wineries. They also have the latest ones to be added, listed on this. Also, this is one of the best things about it, which is very interesting. Grape and bulk wine sales. This is fun. I've talked about grapes a lot of times. I've talked about, you know, the cost of them and different things. And this is just a fun list here. And there's others as well. But let's take, for example, bulk wine Chardonnay. You click on that link there. And what it does is it actually has a little map that highlights the area that the Chardonnay was growing in, the vineyard that was growing, posted on September 22nd, Bulk Wine, located in Sullivan, California, 2014 Santa Barbara County, varietal of Chardonnay, the 420A rootstock, which it tells you that, conventional farming practices, quantity available 3,500 gallons at $12 a gallon. And then the company is Blackjack Ranch Winery. It describes the Chardonnay, even has pictures of the Chardonnay grapes as they were on the vine. It is, description, delicious French oak barrel fermented Chardonnay, recently de-barreled into tank. Call or visit for appointment for samples. We can finish the wine to your specs or bottle it if that's something that interests you. Obviously, it's going to cost more to do that. There's no history of the wine, but some of them do have current history. The vineyard is, since 1996, the vineyard's been in production. It tells you where it is and the size and everything. It tells you the grapes and the acres and all that stuff. Those were planted in 1996. The average vine is 19 years old. Labeling, it gives you that. The surface, elevation, slope, climate, and all sorts of other stuff. Great site. I mean, it really is. It just, and you don't have to be a winery or a grower or anything to just to enjoy this, just to look through it, and just to look at some of the stuff that's available on it and all that. It really is a lot of fun. Just to thumb through it, everyvine.com. Check it out. And again, thank you, Kelly. Thank you for sending this to me. You're absolutely right. She put a note on there. I found this. I love it. And I do too. You can buy maps on this. They have maps available. If you are interested, they have maps for different wine growing regions. They got the Snake River Valley map and locations of vineyards and stuff like that. And they got Mendocino maps, Napa maps, Oregon maps, and Sonoma maps, and I am sure that they will be getting more as time goes on. But the maps are sort of cool. The Stag's Leap District is one of the maps that they from the Napa area and all that. So, cool site, cool information, and just something that I'm sure you would enjoy thumbing through and looking at and just seeing what it has to say and what it has to offer, because there is a lot of information on this site, which is really so cool. And so there you go. Bookmark it and go back and visit it and all that again too. But it's, you know, list of rootstock and all sorts of different things, which is, you know, fun. So and let me another quick story here. Shedhorn Cellars. Now, last one I'm going to end up with here, and then I'm going to, you know, talk a little bit about. Let's see, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Oops. No wonder I can't find it. I'm on my wrong page. There we go. If you've ever been to Napa, and if you haven't, you need to go, because, hey, Napa is the, well, I've said it over and over, in Disney World of Wine, but if you've never been to Napa, you really need to make a trip out there. And if you have been to Napa, you're familiar with the Napa Valley Wine Train. It's a train that runs up and down Napa Valley. It actually goes from... let's see. I had it here just a sec ago. Where is it? Drives me nuts when I had something I had to use it there. Oh, here we go. It's a 36-mile round-trip journey from Napa to St. Helena, and it includes dining and fine dining, actually, and wine. And it can, as many as 370 people can ride on the train during the three-hour-long tour. Mind you, Gilligan's Island, doesn't it? More than 100,000 people ride the train every year. It really is cool. I had an opportunity to ride it many years ago. It's been there for a long, long time. I had an opportunity to ride it many years ago. And at the time, you had the option of just riding through the valley, and you can buy wine and stuff. And then they started the dining, and it became very high-end and all that. But the reason I'm telling you, it's been sold. It's been sold for an undisclosed price by the family of the guy that originally founded it, Vince DiMonaco. DiDomenico is the one that originally founded it. He passed away, and his family sold it. The 150 employees will stay on the job. They're not laying off anybody. It's been sold to a Seattle-based Noble House Hotels and Resorts, and also a Brooks Street. It's a California-based real estate development and investment company. So they are now the owners of the new of the Napa Valley train, the wine train. The wine train is described as a treasured icon. They refuse to say how much they paid for it. One of the guys, spokesman, said that it's between $10 million and $50 million, which, you know, is a big spread. It's a showcase. The person who originally set it up, DJ Monico, who founded the wine train in 1989, was the man behind the Rice-A-Roni brand of products. You all know that. The San Francisco Treat, made famous, you know, by the cable cars and the little jingle and all that. If anybody ever remembers TV shows from a few years ago, which I'm sure most of you do, you remember that. He was the one that started that. And over the years, he has defended the train because of critics saying it Disney-fied the Napa Valley, which it does, but, you know, what the heck, it's fun. It started gourmet dining in 1989, and it's built and operated, actually the line, the railroad line was built in 1864, taking tours from San Francisco up to Napa and Calistoga. Since they arrived in San Francisco, he ran them up to that area there, and so they can go further north and west. Celebrated its 25th anniversary as a wine train, 150th anniversary for the rail corridor last year. So it's been around for a long time. They're planning on not changing anything for it, maybe upgrading and doing things that will be good. Tickets, $124 for the three-hour trip. It wasn't that much when I did it years ago. I must have rode that thing back in, oh, geez, what? It had to be, I don't know, 93. No, it was earlier than that. I don't know. But it's insignificant, really. Recently, they had a problem, though. The wine train, actually national media controversy. There was a group of women, predominantly black, who were ordered to leave the train just this last August 22nd after the train staff and other passengers complained of excessively loud talking and disruptive behavior. The women rejected an apology from the wine train and have consulted with a civil rights attorney for possible lawsuit or settlement. So no one on the wine train, none of the representatives would comment on it, so we will have to see what happened. Also, the new owners wouldn't comment on it, so nobody knows what's going on with that. But that I remember seeing that in the news, too, and I'm thinking, what's going on with the wine train out there? So that's... wine train has been sold. If you've never taken it, you know, save up your money and do it. And, you know, $124, you can buy yourself a lot of wine, but the Napa Valley Wine Train, it is like the San Francisco cable cars. The Napa Valley Wine Train is an icon in our time here. So check it out if you're out there. And do go out there. It's always fun. Oh, wait a minute. Here's a new one. No, that's not about the wine train. We're done. Thank you for tuning in. Oh, we do have something coming up Sunday here. So let me be back in a minute and 30 seconds.
Hey, this is Mike. Coming up this Sunday at Florida State's winery from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. is another wine class. That's right, wine class at Florida State's winery featuring winemaker, vineyardist, cellar master, and tasting expert Ron Hunt. He shares his experiences and educational knowledge of wine in a detailed 3-hour wine class. It's a lot of fun and a great way to learn something new about wine. Some of the topics that are covered include a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, and my favorite, of course, the sampling of wines and a discussion. It's a great presentation, and it's located in the Florida State's Winery Tasting Room. For more information and to RSVP, which we would recommend, please contact the winery at area code 813-996-2113. Again, Florida State's Winery is phone number 813-996-2113. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Don't forget wine class this Sunday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. See you there.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. One more thing I got to tell you about here, and this is something that I just thought was too funny to pass up, so I have to pass this on to you. Let me see where this is. The 16th here. I don't know if you all heard about this or not, but is this the 16th? Yeah, is that the one I want? Yes. Okay. I know it. Well, I can't find it here. I was going to pass this on to you and just, okay, that's there. That's not it. Let's go back here. Let's go to this here and see if it's here. If it's not here, then I guess I'm not going to share it with you. Yes, there it is. I was looking at the wrong one. I don't know if you all heard about this. I did, and I chuckled. Now, I've had some customers come in and mention it and all that. President Vladimir Putin and the former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi are accused of drinking one of the oldest wines from Crimea. And the country of Ukraine is livid for them doing this. The two annexed the peninsula's oldest surviving bottles of wine. And the Crimean prosecutors, now exiled in the mainland Ukraine, said the two leaders tasted a 240-year-old bottle of Spanish wine produced during the 18th century reign of Catherine the Great and brought to Crimea by Count Mikhail Voronskov. The wine-loving count served as governor general of Crimea for more than two decades in the early 19th century. And the Massandra winery that is he established in Crimea and included his private wine collection was taken over by Russia when it seized Crimea from the Ukraine last year. And the prosecutors in Ukraine have now opened a criminal case over the incident involving Putin and Berlusconi, citing that this is a large-scale misuse of property. The prosecutors say the bottle was worth more than $90,000. At the time of Crimea's annexation, the winery owned five bottles of the famous Jerez. Two more bottles were sold at Sotheby's auction in 1990 and 2001. At the time, fetched $50,000 in the 2001 auction. And in 2014, the Massander winery was placed on the list of EU sanctions after passing into Russian hands. So the European Union has sanctioned against it now. But they popped open a 240-year-old bottle of wine worth approximately $90,000 and shared it while they were in the Ukraine. So, you know, I mean, I guess it's good to be the president of Russia, because I at least they could have done is wrote a review about it or something instead of just, you know, drinking it, not saying anything. But I wanted to share that with you. I thought that was just too funny that they did that. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Have yourself a wonderful week and be safe out there. Drink lots of wine and we'll see you back here next week. Check out our sites. Check out all the other stuff and all that stuff. Have any questions or anything, call me, email me, fax me. Well, don't fax me because we don't have a fax. Facebook, whatever. We will look forward to seeing you next week. Have yourself a wonderful wine-filled week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.